This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora everyone, welcome to another episode of Aratoi On Air. Thanks so much for coming. Today we're really privileged to host an interview with Nick Tepper, who's taken up the Robert Lord Residency as part of his mahi for the New Zealand Young Writers Festival, and Hashi, who's doing a bind-it-yourself workshop on the 21st of September, funded by Creative Communities Scheme. Sean's really excited to speak to both our guests today, and we're really excited to share that kōrero with you. Just want to give a big shout out to both Nick and Hashi for their time. We recognise that our creatives in Otiputi are very busy, so it's always lovely to hear from you when we do. Here's Sean with that interview from Nick Tepper.
Nick Tepper, you're a multidimensional artist, musician, performer, writer now,
apparently.
Or maybe always. Tell me about that kind of intersection between your creative practice, because I imagine they all kind of inform one another, right?
I started making stuff when I was like in high school, and probably an earnest attempt to make stuff when I would have been about 15 and started playing in a band. Mm. So that probably like kicked off writing of any form intended for a public audience for me. That was very inspired by just musicians that I enjoyed when I was that age, books that I was reading at that age. So Stephen King. I think I read Stephen King because my dad read Stephen King.
Mm.
So I remember being a kid and talking to my dad. I was probably about eight, and the final Dark Tower novel had come out, and He had been telling me about the Dark Tower, like the story of it, kind of overarchingly, and I just had so many questions for him. Mm. I just had endless questions from about the story because he was telling me about it. And I was like, oh, I was just fascinated by it. And so I remember being a child and being excited to get old enough to be able to read it myself. And as a kid, I was an avid reader, like always, just like always hidden a book. It's interesting because I have older siblings, but they're all a lot older than me. 11 years is the closest gap between me and the next youngest, I guess.
Yes.
And then I have a younger sister as well, but she's a lot younger than me, 13 years younger than me. So I very much grew up for the majority of my childhood being an only child with these kind of ghosts of siblings almost. So I did a lot of things that like only children did, reading a lot of books, playing by myself, drawing big maps on the ground and stuff like that.
Mm.
So I think being creative and writing, even just mentally and as a kid, like it was always something that I was always doing just to entertain myself. But that Stephen King, that the appeal of horror, I feel like there's no better way for me to still think about the appeal of horror than being a kid and going into cash converters and going and looking at the backs of like the R16 DVDs to see if I could get a glimpse of like the gore or the ghost or the monster or something that was in the film that made it R16, that made it kind of forbidden to me as a child.
Mm.
And you're going through, rifling through and pulling it out and being like, oh, that looks scary. And then I'd like look at the back, but oh God.
Getting that little fright, that little micro fright.
Yeah. Totally. Or giving my imagination the little bit of, just a little bit of like chaff it needs to chew to start creating more. I could see the one picture of the little monster and then, oh, my imagination. And then I'll have nightmares because I've seen this tiny picture of a monster. And so the imagination starts doing the work and thinking of all the horrible things that could happen in that film. I think it's actually like quite a beautiful thing. It's obviously not a great thing to be having nightmares as a kid, but I think it's a beautiful sign of an imagination hard at work.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes learning to, I don't know if channel it's the right word, but just notice how one gets themselves into that state where it's like, cool, now the imagination's firing and it's going places. And then how do you kind of harness that in writing?
And the imagination did fire. You ended back up at high school, presumably in Dunedin. And was that when you kind of first started getting into theatre proper?
Mm, yeah. It's funny because I always think like I was 15 and then I started doing school production.
Mm.
But actually, that's not really true. It's like a thing that I've always, my parents used to send me along to around the corner at Interact drama classes. So back when I was probably five or six, Theatre Works, who run Interact, were running like holiday program drama performances. And I think I did a couple of them, which was a little, I found an old photo of me and some other kid jumping off the stage upstairs there in that motel building. So right from a young age, my parents had been kind of at least giving me access to that world and being like, you know, try this out, you might enjoy it. And I definitely, yeah, as a kid, I was into that. But there was a kind of a moment where I came back to it really of my own volition when I was a teenager. And it was like, oh, and actually it was the community of it that brought me in to begin with, more so than having any desire to be, I don't know, telling stories or having any conscious desire to be doing that. It was like, I knew that I enjoyed being on the stage and it felt like a fun, special thing to be allowed to do. I knew that there was something in it that was like, don't you love that? And coming back to it of my own volition when I was like 15 or so was like, oh, cool. This is a decision that I'm making of who I want to be and what I want to be doing with my time and what I feel is important.
And you majored in theatre studies at the University of Otago. Congratulations. And then you went off overseas for a while. Tell me a little bit about your time in Melbourne and what you learned over there.
It was a beautiful experience. It came at a really opportune time in my life where I thought I was pretty cool. And I was quickly...
down a peg or...?
Oh, yeah, quite a few pegs. It was quickly revealed to me how inflated my sense of cool might have been.
It's good to be humbled sometimes.
It is really good to be humbled. I think it's the constant cycle of life, really. Mm. Ego swelling and then being popped by the by the pin of reality.
So we're talking about the 16th Street Actors Studio. How long was that course for, Nick?
It was a year.
Yeah. And pretty intensive by the sounds of it as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah, so it was mid-2018 to mid-2019. I went over there thinking like, all I got to do is make some contacts now and I'll be sweet. And in the first week of being there, I was like, I don't know how to act. What am I doing? It's just like immediately like hitting a concrete brick wall and being like, oh, wow, okay.
This is how it's done.
Totally. Or like this is the very start of figuring out how maybe you give an authentic performance, you know? I was like, wow, craft. It just feels so privileged. And I remember getting to the end of that course. There's a real cliche around drama schools, this idea that they break you down and they build you back up and they turn you into an actor. That wasn't my experience with the school that I went to. What it was people having their bubbles burst and actually being shown, there are many paths to a great performance, but actually being shown like, oh no, the very beginning of it, you need to be vulnerable. You can't get away with not doing that because an audience or a viewer smells it from a mile off. Mm. And in a film, like, you know, good editing can kind of make things passable. But on the stage, like...
It's raw.
And even on film, like great performances on film, they're not passable performances that have been edited well. They're great performances. Yeah, it's a vulnerability. It's the... Which is as much of a craft thing because it's being able to get into that space and know yourself well enough in that way to be able to facilitate that within yourself on demand as a job, you know?
Why did you choose to come back to Otipoti Dunedin after that? You would think a year in Melbourne, cracked it, world's your oyster.
That's it. I'm famous now.
Come back home.
Yeah, I know. Why? Well, it was either work with Brad Pitt or come tough back. Choice. And I just thought, you know, Dunedin's, honestly. So I spent, I came back briefly afterwards to do Romeo and Juliet and... Then COVID hit not long after that. So I went back to Melbourne. COVID hit, didn't leave the house much for a year. And then my partner at the time and I broke up and I was like, oh, I need to go home. Lick the wounds.
Life. Yeah.
You know, was feeling, you know, just very, very far away from home, and it was really good. It was a really good decision. Whether I knew it or not at the time, there was a lot of unpacking and processing to do. Yeah, came back and then was just really grateful to start doing work with Jess Latin over that Matsariki when I came back. And that was stepping back into the world of, I guess it was like stepping back into like Te Ao Māori and really starting to look at my whakapapa and go, well, I'm back here now. And I felt there were moments when I was in Australia where I was like, oh, I'm not from here. And I hadn't, it was my first time living away even living out of Old Sportsy. So I was really like, oh, I'm not from here. And I can actually feel that. And whenever I come back to Aotearoa, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a, like a resonance there that didn't exist over there. It was real palpable. So, yeah, yeah. I'm really increasingly so passionate about the reo. For me, that's just, I'm just developing that in myself because I want to be able to pass that on to my children and I want it to be a thing that they can, that they have the privilege to take for granted.
Congratulations on being a Robert Lord resident this year.
Thanks.
You going in with any kind of plan, any kind of approach?
Yeah, I have got a plan. I submitted a proposal as part of that application. It's a project that in equal measures excites me and scares me though. So it feels like a good direction to be heading with the writing.
Yeah.
And will hopefully be in Te Reo. I can say that much. I'm so looking forward to it. I haven't thought of myself much as a writer. I still don't. I feel like an imposter. So I'm really looking forward to meeting more writers, young writers, who no doubt, I think, you know, probably the majority of them will be more experienced than me, at least in terms of thinking of themselves as writers, which I think is an important thing to a certain degree because it, I don't know, I think... maybe it gives, I'm looking forward to when I properly think about myself as a writer and I feel like, yeah, going to go do my writing now for the day.
It's been such a pleasure to chat with you, Nick. Thank you so much for your time and we look forward to your next move. Nick Tepe, everyone. Kia ora tato and welcome along to Aratoi On Air. Today it's my great pleasure to be joined by a bookbinder, a graphic designer, someone who's run their own business and has specialised in many kind of handcrafted things. Hashi, welcome to the show. How are you?
Kia ora, thank you so much for having me here.
We're here today to talk about a couple of things that are happening, a little get-together you've been doing for the last 2 years called Bind It Yourself. It's happening on September 21st in the Dunningham Suite of the Dunedin City Library. And it's, from what I can gather, really bringing community together over the art of bookbinding, of all things. When did you start getting into bookbinding?
So I was a college student then, and I saw one of my professors having this really, really cool notebook in his hand. And I was like, oh, where did you get that from? And he was like, oh, I made it. I was like mind blown because I never knew that you could do it on your own. And this was like almost like 10 years ago. And that was a time when you don't find cool stationery anywhere. So I was like really impressed and I was like, oh, I want to learn it as well. And I tried to, you know, at that point of time, even though like search engines were still something like new and people were figuring things out, I was like on it and trying to find a video that could help me figure out what it was. And that's how I learned my first bookbinding technique.
What do you think that feeling is when people see, when people hold in their hands their personalized journal or diary and a little bit of themselves has gone into it? Can you kind of describe that feeling for me?
When I started making my own sketchbooks and then like I didn't think that like people are going to like want it or buy it. That wasn't my intention. Like I enjoyed the act of binding books and then I did like 3 or 4 notebooks and suddenly like when I showed it to people and then they were like, oh, it's so lovely, can you make one for me? And I was like, okay, I mean like you could make it, why are you like asking me to make it, sort of a thing. And then I was like, okay, sure, why not. And then I made my first notebook and then I gave it to someone and then there was another person and they were like, oh, in your own sketchbook, you have made a little drawing. Can you like make one for me where I'm going to give this so-and-so person and, you know, they would say something. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, you know, that's something I didn't think about. And then when I started making those notebooks, I realized that people like really connected with it because some of them could not like draw anything on their own, but they really wanted to cherish the memory or like something of the other person. So they were like, oh, it's really good that you make it. And then when I give it to them, I realize that I'm helping them out to create something that's really, really memorable.
A blank book. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's not the first thing you'd possibly kind of associate with being a treasure or tauka. But what I figure is happening is people are putting a little bit of their essence into these things. People are putting themselves into these things. And that quiet pride kind of comes out of the piece that they've created for whatever purpose, if that's for someone else, if that's for themselves, it might be the perfect reason to start drawing, start scrapbooking, write down your memories in a special place, on a special page, you know?
And I also noticed that, like, I've done, like, literally, like, hundreds of notebooks, like, customized ones. And never really there was any repetition between the notebooks at all. Like, each of them had their own favorite colors, textures. Like, sometimes I use, like fabrics on top of the cover. Sometimes it's digital designs. Sometimes it's, like, handmade textured papers. So it's all different. And it's just so wonderful to even think that there are so many different types of ideas.
And I guess this has been an exercise for you in learning how to teach firstly and then facilitate kind of community gatherings in order to kind of make people feel welcome, safe, treasured, creative, all those things that are conducive to making really special things. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, because there is no right or wrong in this one. In one of the first ever bookbinding workshops that I taught, I was being, you know, a bit nervous, and I was like, oh, this is required, you should do this, you should do that. And then suddenly I had this one person who sort of did a different design than what I was teaching her, the technique. But the thing was, it was beautiful. You can't go wrong in it. And that moment I was like, oh yeah, I mean, like, there is no right or wrong. Like, it's just different types of techniques or like designs that you achieve by doing different things.
Your first workshops started in 2023, and I see that you collaborated with a couple of people in the community, Francis from Evening Books and Chloe, an academic, and that one in particular was aimed at a group of recent immigrants. Feedback from your workshops has been overwhelmingly positive from what I can gather. What is it that drives you to kind of engage with different communities in Otipoti and pull them through and bring them together to do bookbinding?
So I was new to the place. So I was new to Dunedin, and then I sort of found this group where there were like people new to the city already participating in workshops. So I sort of wanted to be one of them, and that's how I joined the group, because I wanted to be occupied, to meet people. Since I was new to the city, I sort of felt like, you know, I need to, you know, be out there. And when I went there and I saw that there were people from different countries, like, and all of them loved working with their hands, like, they were, like, they sort of did calligraphy, painting, all sort of things. And then I was sharing with them that, oh, I used to bind books when I was back in India. And I was like, so these are the pictures, and I was showing them. And the facilitator, Chloe, was like, oh, would you be interested in doing a bookbinding workshop for us? And I was like, I had never thought of it before, but yeah, why not? And I was like, let's do it. And that's how our first workshop happened. When I did that, I sort of felt like I was able to connect with people. And if we had had the time and space, probably we would be exploring and doing more of it. That's how I felt about the workshop.
Engaging in the art of bookbinding provides a unique opportunity to explore creativity and craftsmanship. Your next workshop is going to focus on creating personal journals and other distinctive pieces on a practical level. If I was to participate, is that basically, you know, I register or show up, there's paper, glue, scissors. What I expect happens is I'm making this beautiful kind of treasure for myself, but at the same time I'm meeting 25, 30 people and forming some kinship and having a really nice time with other people also finding their way and creating something beautiful on the table.
So what we have been thinking is like maybe like one session of 15 people each. That way we keep it small and tightly knit, and people can get to know each other, talk to each other, look at different ideas, what they are trying to do, learn different techniques maybe. Because I've just realized that whatever you tell people, it doesn't matter, because when you have the tools and crafty people in one room, they might actually explore and come up with something new. So what we will be providing in the workshop is that there will be a space where we will set up all the tools. We basically do notebooks that don't require glue. So it's all made of just papers and threads. One of the things that we learned from the previous workshop is people like to color, and we sort of came up with this cover designs where people can actually like do their binding and then take it home and color, or like make a collage on it or do whatever they want. Yeah.
Two sessions, a morning and an afternoon session, each hosting between 12 and 15 people. The workshops, how much do they cost to enter?
Practically nothing, because wow. We are being funded by DCC, by Creative New Zealand. So it's practically nothing, and people just have to come. And if they want, they can pay like what they want or like a koha.
That's wonderful, wonderful news. And if someone wants to participate in your Bind It Yourself workshops, how do they get in touch and register their interest?
Dunedin Public Libraries is hosting us, so they will be having an event page with the link. So people can just go onto the link and register for the workshop.
Too easy. Thank you, Harshi, for your time today, and I really look forward to seeing the results of your next Bind It Yourself workshop at the Dunningham Suite, Dunedin City Library, on the 21st of September 2025. And here's to many more really wonderful community endeavours, bringing people together to make really special treasures. Kia ora.
Thanks for listening in, everybody. We understand you've got a lot on your plate at the moment. There's heaps going on, but we appreciate you lending your ears to Aratoi On Air. You can find us at Aratoi Otiputi on Instagram and Facebook. If you're not a social media human, you can also email us aratoi@dcc.govt.nz. If you don't have a computer and you don't like the internet, give us a bell at 03 477 4000. Big shout out and big mihi to our friends at Otago Access Radio. For more episodes, more kōrero, more whakaaro, find our previous episodes on the Otago Access Radio website, oar.org.nz. Hey, thanks for listening. Look after yourself. Māori ora.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.